How's it going, everyone? I am so excited for this week's episode. You know, when I do guest episodes, I have this like, I don't know what it is. I just feel like every time I hang up, I'm just hard on myself. So I'll think like, maybe I should have done that better, or I wonder how that's going to sound. And I do not edit my episodes right away when I have a guest, because I typically am a few weeks ahead. So I just kind of leave it. And then a few days before it's going to go live, I will go in and edit it and record my intro, outro, all the different things. So anyway, when I was editing this week's episode, I am so happy with how it turned out. I think you guys are going to really, really like it. So without further ado, let me tell you about this week's guest. Her name is Amanda Dames. She is a certified sex and relationship coach, sexologist, and a former dominatrix, professional dominatrix, let me add that. And she has over a decade of hands-on experience in the world of kink. She currently has a brand called The Kink Consultant. She's got like over 160,000 followers on Instagram, you guys. And she coaches people to be more comfortable talking about their fantasies, their kinks, their fetishes. And we had such a great conversation. We talked about all things kink, the difference between kinks and fetishes and fantasies. We talked about how sometimes people feeling like they're unable to talk about these things can lead, unfortunately, to infidelity. And lastly, we talked about how to bring up these conversations with your partner. So if you are married, if you're in a relationship, this is something that I think you will find a lot of value in. And if you're single, it's just more things to learn. I learned so much in this episode. You might catch that a few times I did feel a little uncomfortable. I think for two reasons. One, I realized I don't talk about this stuff very often. So I was a little like, oh, okay. And then also my dad listens to this podcast. So I didn't want to be volunteering too much information about my sexual past, knowing that my father, who I love and respect and adore, is probably going to listen at some point. So anyway, January 29th, you guys, first guest episode of 2026. So here we go. I hope you enjoy. I am so excited for this conversation. The timing of it is perfect. We're in a brand new year. We have probably a lot of people who are wrapping up dry January, who are thinking about different goals and maybe setting some new intentions for themselves as far as their relationships go. And with Valentine's Day right around the corner, a sexy holiday, if you will, your business as a kink coach really intrigued me. So let's talk about it.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me. And yes, I actually think Valentine's Day is the perfect time of year for people to pay special attention to spicing things up in the bedroom. Just, you know, new year, new us.
I've got to know, how did you even start and decide to call yourself a kink coach?
So I've been kinky my whole life, and I became a certified sex and relationship coach. And the course I did was called Somatica, and it's the entire course is focused on like somatic pleasure, just pleasure and the embodiment of pleasure, really. And I realized there is so much here that is helpful to the world of kink. I had been kinky my entire life. I'd been a professional dominatrix. And the reason I was doing sex and relationship coaching like certification was I wanted to help other individuals and couples have less shame around their sex lives. And when I saw the how well Somatica could be used for kink, I decided I was going to focus my entire coaching practice on helping people explore their own kinks. And that involves de-shamifying, demystifying, and destigmatizing kink, because I think there's a lot of stigma with it, to help people feel more comfortable. So once I became certified as a sex and relationship coach, I was like, all right, I'm making my business about kink, and I'll be the kink consultant.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I think that's so awesome, first of all. And then second of all, it goes so perfectly with all the different things that we talk about here on the Scarlet Edit, because one of the big things is shame, and shame around past decisions, shame that we carry, shame that we should feel comfortable letting go. And I mean, I would not consider myself very kinky. However, I, from having conversations with other people, I can see how people would be nervous or ashamed that, like, oh my gosh, this is something that I like in a sexual situation.
Completely. And I think that kink is such a kink is a spectrum, right? Okay. It's basically considered anything that's not vanilla sex. So I might challenge that you'd say you're not kinky. If you have ever, and I'm not saying you have, but like, let's say you've ever enjoyed a partner pinning your head, hands above your head during sex, a little, like even light hair pulling, grabbing your face and kissing you with a little bit of aggression. Those things might fall on the kink spectrum.
And okay.
Right. So a lot.
Yeah. I think I'm going to like the opposite end. That's like very explicit.
Yeah. And that's what the media tells people what kink is. Because when you think about it, TV shows love to dramatize things. Like, I don't know, was your high school experience like they showed high school experiences on television, or was it TV's a little more dramatic, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what kink is like too. So yes, there are the more extreme versions, but then it's a lot of just two people sort of playing with power, doing a little bit of role play in their own homes. That's also something that falls under kink.
Okay.
Conversation for another time, but I think kink has a PR problem, and that is part of what like hurts it, because people are like, I'm not kinky, or I don't do any kinks. And it's like, you might actually enjoy them and be practicing some right now. But what you're talking about, and something I want to talk about today, is fetishes, perhaps. Mm. And a fetish is, a kink is a nice to have. It's fun to play with power exchange in the bedroom. A fetish is something that is needed in order for someone to reach orgasm. And you've probably heard of someone having a foot fetish, meaning they're obsessed with feet.
Yes. Yeah.
But fetish can also, I, for example, have a spanking fetish. I really enjoy being disciplined. And if I've ever had an orgasm in my life, I was either thinking about spanking in some way or thinking about being disciplined. And okay. I need that as part of my sex life. So the reason I wanted to talk about that here is power exchange can also be a fetish for some people. Some people need to be in control in the bedroom in some of those more extreme, while still safe and consensual ways. And they need that to be able to enjoy their sex life. They need it to be able to orgasm. And I think people who grow up with a fetish, or people who have a really deep interest in kink but haven't gotten to explore it, are some of the people who feel the most shame about it, because it's not something you can brush aside as, oh, it would be fun to do, but it's fine that I can't do it or my partner's not interested. When it falls into that fetish category, it can be a, like, feel like a suffocation if you're not having your need met, because it's something you actually need to orgasm. And it can feel like you're not being seen. So I try and shout that one from the rooftops to help people understand, yes, kink is on a spectrum. And for some people, it is an actual need. And there's nothing abnormal about it. It's just, it's not common, you know?
Okay. So
that is how I wanted to set this up, because I love what you talk about in your podcast. I love the discussion around shame. And the reason that I think I reached out to you when you were starting this podcast, because
yeah,
a lot of kinksters end up looking for kink through affairs as opposed to in their own marriage or partnership for reasons. Sometimes it's easier. Sometimes they've been shot down by their partner, and it just feels easier to open up and be vulnerable with an almost stranger or someone who you don't have a life history with.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, have you ever been like sitting on an airplane and then all of a sudden you realize you told the person sitting next to you your life story and your deepest, darkest secret, and you've never met them before?
Yes. A ton of times. Yeah. I'm an open book, especially strangers. But yeah, so you've obviously had to, right?
Yeah. Oh my God, absolutely. And then you're like, wow, I just shared that with a stranger. Like, hope you don't remember my name.
And it's the same thing, because I always joke, it's really hard to share your kinks and fetishes with the same person who's cleaning the toilet bowl on the weekends, you know?
Right.
There's so many levels of intimacy that you have with a partner that sometimes opening yourself up in this new way can be really challenging. Or worse, you may have already been shot down because your partner didn't realize how important it was to you. They didn't fully understand the need and just the lack of clarity for them. And that's not really anyone's fault. We're rarely given the language around this. So
yeah,
it's difficult.
It's so true, because I definitely in a relationship, if you are vulnerable with your partner, and then, you know, maybe they make fun of you or they dismiss you or they roll their eyes or they like think, oh, that's gross. Like, you're going to feel pretty shitty.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand. It's funny. I had the guy who's the chief strategy officer of Ashley Madison on the show a few months ago, and he talked about that, like, with their members. Like, sometimes, like, if people are shot down by their partner, it's not enough cause for divorce, but it is a reason why some people do join their website and look to have a discreet affair, because they feel like they can be more open and themselves with somebody when they're chatting online and then set something up versus feeling like crap because they told their husband or they told their wife that they wanted to do something and they made fun of them.
I know, because that rejection is still very painful. Like, mm-hmm. And what's happening is the partner or spouse might just be unfamiliar and think, I think it's a really common reaction if you're unfamiliar with something to shun it and be like, no, yeah, that's awful. Or people have that idea that it's what they see in TV and movies and only weirdos are into that. So they get scared that their partner's interested in pursuing that. And they, like, again, put up a wall and say, no, absolutely not. And refuse to engage in a conversation. And it's never one-sided. It is never just one party's fault. But I think that, like, these are the dominoes that fall that lead to an affair, mm-hmm, at times.
Yeah. So let's talk about the spectrum, because I'm certainly intrigued, because I, again, like I mentioned, I was more thinking kinks are these like extreme things where you see played out. I mean, I remember in one episode of Sex and the City when Carrie was dating some guy who was like a politician in New York, and then he told her that he wanted to pee on her, and she was like, wait, what? You know, and she was like so nervous about that because that wasn't something that she thought she wanted. So I think of more, I mean, to me, that's extreme. And you tell me if that's not extreme and maybe that's more in the middle. I don't know.
I have only known people who do that on the more like kink is part of their identity. Like, they are definitely kinksters who need kink. They enjoy it, as opposed to people who are like, oh yeah, this is a fun, nice to have. Like, and when you think about it, peeing on someone is a way to degrade them, mm-hmm, a lot of times. And kink allows for, it's a container to indulge and explore that type of sensation, that experience in a safe, consensual way. And in fairness to that episode, that came out at a time where no one was talking about this. It was a taboo thing for that to even come up. So props to them. But also, I think it was interesting that she took it seriously. Yes, she talked to her friends and she was sort of like creeped out by it, but it wasn't something where she immediately shut him down and said, you're disgusting, I'm leaving. And it was like, let me think about this, you know, which, mm-hmm, was not a bad way to go about it. And she decided for herself, it wasn't for her. I think they handled it really well in the show. I'll admit it's actually not that common. But every so often I talk to someone who will say, yes, I let my boyfriend pee on me one time, or I let my girlfriend pee on me. But definitely, I think it would fall slightly more extreme, or, you know what I'm going to say? More niche. It's a more niche for people who like degradation play, as opposed to people who just like doing some type of power exchange.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I'm going to learn so many new terms in this discussion.
Oh, I hope
degradation play. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I totally understand what that means. I've just never heard it phrased like that.
Exactly. Right. And people, it's all about your core desire. To get a little bit technical, this is what I work with my clients on. I ask them like, well, what do you want to experience? And they might say, I want to be spanked. I'm like, okay, why do you want to be spanked? How does that make you feel? Or why do you want to be peed on? How does that make you feel? The answer might be, I want to feel used. I like feeling used. And when someone pees on me, I feel like I'm a little bit worthless and I enjoy playing with that energy. It's fantasy. You know, that's not how you actually appear, but sometimes it's fun to engage with your worst fear. For me, one of my worst fears is actually being worthless. It's fun to play with that sometimes because I talk about it like I'm bringing it out of the shadows and into the light. I'm like putting it under a microscope and realizing it's not that bad. It's a fun thing to play with. I'm facing my own like fear of what if I am worthless and, mm-hmm, getting to manipulate that a little bit. And then, you know, there's aftercare. So again, I've played with it in a safe container. And then after a scene is done, there's aftercare, there's hugging, there's like praise, and there's debriefing on it. And it's a reinforcement that I'm not worthless. That was just a fun thing that we played with and explored.
Okay.
I always try to get to that with people of like, what are they trying to feel? Are you trying to feel degraded? Are you trying to feel worthless? What are you trying to feel and explore? And how does the kink align with that? So that's what Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, getting like really getting to the root of it.
Yeah.
To understand like, okay, like not only what is it, but why do you want to feel that way? Like what excites you about that? And I think, okay, a thought that went through my head is, you know, sometimes even, again, I'm just going back to like different movies or TV shows, and I can't recall which one this was actually from, but it was like some high powered, like, you know, Wall Street guy or C-suite guy. And, you know, he had hired a woman to just absolutely like tie him up, degrade him. He couldn't move. He couldn't speak. He had like a ball in his mouth. And watching that, I was thinking like, okay, like this guy obviously has like a very high powered job. He probably spends his day making very, very tough, expensive decisions, has to be in charge from sunup to sundown. And so he doesn't want to be in charge anymore when he's in the bedroom. He wants somebody else to like take control.
Yeah, that's a really common one. When I was a professional dom, that came up a lot. CEOs, executives would come in and they would want that because they had built a career and life for themselves where people were afraid to tell them no. So it was fun for them to play with being told no, being restrained, being restricted, because they face very few restrictions in their actual real lives, you know?
So yeah. It's kind of like this is a way to explore what you're not in a way that is safe and like not real, but you still get to have those feelings and like that energy, like you were saying.
We're definitely playing with a fantasy. Even for people who want to live a 24/7 lifestyle where they're a collared submissive, they might still have a job. They're not an actual like 24/7 submissive, totally submissive in every part of their life. But when they come home in the confines of their own home, they are in that role. When they're with their partner, they are in that submissive role. And it doesn't mean they're crawling on the ground. It just means that there is someone that they are in service to. Even in those 24/7 relationships, it's still kind of a fantasy, excite joke. You're not showing up to the hospital in your dom sub roles if someone has to go to the hospital. You know what I mean? You like cut the fantasy and you go into reality. So yeah, it is a way to play into a fun fantasy where you get to explore parts of yourself that I believe exist in all of us. And it's just what about what you want to pull out and put under a microscope.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So going back to the kind of spectrum, like if something like hair pulling is rather on the mild side, like what's something that's like in the middle?
I think heavier impact play, or I would say something in the middle, is bondage with something like rope. I think that's in the middle because it requires some skill. You need to put in time and effort to learn how to tie rope properly around someone, do it safely so that you can bind their wrists together and maybe their entire arm, maybe behind their back, using rope as opposed to just leather cuffs. The reason, so there's two reasons it's in the middle. It's intricate, it takes time to learn, and it's riskier. You can actually cut off someone's circulation and do some nerve damage, right? With hair pulling, I think the absolute worst case scenario is you pull out a chunk of someone's hair, but hair grows back. Nerve damage can be forever. Yeah. Okay. So that's why I'd put that on in the middle. And then I think you're naturally going to ask about something maybe more extreme.
Yes.
So, I think there is more extreme play that I would consider deep psychological play where you're really messing with someone's mind and you might be playing on previous trauma that they have, where they've asked for it. But, you know, it's about like, and we'll get into that. That might be one. Another one that I consider anything extreme would be anything that leaves permanent marks. So there are things that people do with razors that like they can. It's interesting because some people do this for art. They do a type of tattoo where they use razors to make. Yeah, I think it's called scarification. And it's a type of tattoo that can exist in BDSM as well. You can play with sharps. You can do needle play. There are people who will literally hang themselves from hooks. So, yeah, I've seen it. I know, right? And that, I would say, is much more extreme. And those enjoy pain so much that they try and put themselves more in a trance state to be able to endure it. Them a rush. So I think are more extreme. Anything that's going to leave a scar, I'd count as extreme. Or break skin.
Oh, I mean, totally. Because I don't know, like, I am not someone that, like, I don't equate pain and pleasure. So when I think about anything that's painful, I'm like, oh, like the rest of me is like, no, I don't want pain. I don't want to feel pain. So I remember years ago, one of my friends saying, I said something about some kind of pain. I don't know if it was like period cramps or something. And she was like, oh God, she's like, oh, you have like no pain tolerance. And I thought about that many times over the years. And what I actually have come to realize is that I actually have a very high pain tolerance. I have a very low tolerance for pain in general. So it's like, I don't like pain. I can tolerate it. I just prefer not to.
Yeah. And I can get down with that. So there's types of pain I like and types I don't. I love a hard spanking. I love the belt being used on my butt. Basically on my butt, I can handle a lot of pain and I enjoy it. When I have to go get blood taken and someone's about to put a needle in me, like I'm the biggest baby, so afraid of the little pinch that's about to happen.
Right.
There are types of pain I enjoy and then types I don't. An example that's crazy to me is needle play is a form of extreme kink that exists and people are into it. And to me, that's shocking. I'm like, oh, you're letting someone stick a needle in you? And
yeah, that's wild.
I have stuck needles in people as in my life as a pro. There were people who would ask for it. So I've had the experience. But even then, it took a lot to be able to put someone in a level of pain that I know I would not want to experience myself.
Oh my gosh, I bet. Yeah. I mean, I think anything concerning bodily fluids, I don't know that I could wrap my head around that.
No, that's a fair one. Like so there's definitely interest in water sports. A lot of people have that, like we just talked about a golden shower, and that's what the episode was about. Blood. These are more extreme forms of play, and they're not everyday things, but they get a disproportionate amount of attention in media.
Totally. 100%. Yeah. And I feel like, again, like those are the things that people think about when you say the word kink. They don't think about like, oh, I like being choked, or I like being a little slapped on the cheek, or, you know, being smacked on my butt. Like they don't think about those things because that's so, it seems like, oh, whatever. That's no big deal.
100%. Exactly that. So, but then that does more harm than good because if you start a conversation with, I have a kink, someone's bracing for impact as opposed to being like, oh, what is it? Hair pulling? A little face slapping? Like, they're thinking, oh, do you want to be beaten bloody?
And right.
That is what people think. Like, everyone still thinks it's all whips and chains.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably.
I mean, I have had a conversation once in the past with someone who she did like almost like very physical, like to be like hit in the face, like really hard. And that surprised me because I don't want to be hit in the face ever, you know? Yeah. So
I can relate to that in the way that, well, I'm scared of someone ever coming up to me in public and hitting me in the face, but that I'm kind of expecting and done right in the middle of a tense, hot scene can be really fun and exhilarating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a common one. People, there's a lot of articles right now. There's a lot of concern, especially over in England right now, about the prevalence of choking, what they actually mean is strangulation in porn. And there's a lot of people doing it. And there's some testing coming out about how there's studies done on how dangerous that can actually be, not only because you could literally suffocate someone to death, but also because there's an increased risk of stroke from it. So oftentimes then another thing that happens when we talk about kink is all you hear about is, oh, well, people are dying from choking because it's being handled so poorly, because if we're not talking about kink, we're not educating on it safely, and then people are getting hurt. So that's another
gosh.
Anytime you hear about kink in the news, it's always a negative thing.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, and then I was just thinking about like what I think it was in 2012 when oh my God, now it's like on the tip of my tongue. What was that movie that came out?
50 Shades of Grey, the book?
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, the trilogy, yeah. I remember reading all of those and you know every woman was just like like reading it so quickly, cuz that opened up a whole other like world.
People hate on that book too much. I want to explain. 50 Shades of Grey was one of the first, like, well-known books and pieces of media, or the first thing that came out and hit pop culture that showed the kink wasn't all whips and chains. It's some of it. Mm-hmm. The problem was it's easy to fall in love with a billionaire and to allow him some grace, right?
Yes.
Meeting a billionaire is my biggest fantasy. I'm kinky as fuck, right? I would classify my biggest fantasy as meeting a billionaire. and that's what he is. So he's held up as this, like, oh, he's everything you want. And then that sort of shields what kink is in this and what's actually being portrayed. And it's a normal couple. I mean, normal, except for the fact that he's really wealthy and she's very young. A normal couple exploring kink in the bedroom. They put mm-hmm. on... They go to work every day, 9 to 5. This isn't their entire life. It just takes right. up their entire minds as they're going through it because it's such a dramatic, tense time in both of their lives. Mm-hmm. I loved 50 Shades of Grey for what it did for the community and making it so much more commonplace and allowing more people to explore it.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. Although now that we're talking more about it, one of the things that I do remember in the book was that there was some older woman that he had kind of exposed him to that world. And then therefore he became how he was. And then when he brought in, I can't remember the girl's name, but when he brought in that girl that was his girlfriend, he ended up marrying her. But I think one of the things about that, though, is it almost, I think by having that woman appear in the book, it kind of gave it that's why he is how he is. It wasn't like he was like that just by his own.
Like he hadn't discovered it by himself. But
yes,
he also had, this is another thing that I forgot about. He had a lot of abuse in his mm-hmm. history. I can't believe this. I've never seen the movies. I think I saw the third one. My friend took me to the movies to see it, but I didn't see the first two.
If I saw any of them, to be honest with you. I've more often than not, I can't say always, but more often than not, I've always found the movies to be less enjoyable than the book because you can just get so deep into everything in books. So
I visually remember so much about the book because it, as much as people complained about the writing, she definitely painted a picture. For example,
oh, absolutely. That red room?
Yes. And the thing I remember is also that the abuse only sticks out because he drew in lipstick where she could and couldn't touch. Or like he circled where she couldn't touch. And that was because of the abuse he suffered. And I think the implication was also that the abuse happened and then he didn't know, but he was like an angry teenager. And then he met this woman who like helped him channel it into kink.
Yep.
That's what it was. I should know. I haven't reread it since.
I mean, it's been like almost 14 years, I think, since those books came out. So I think that our recollection, though, is pretty good for that amount of time.
Right. It is that long. I know. A well-written book. And I know a lot of people in the kink space hate on it because they're like, oh, it did so much damage. And I'm like, no, it didn't. The only reason we're all out here publicly talking about it is because of that book. The only reason it became famous is because it did excite things in people. Mm-hmm. Like, did you talk to your friends about it?
Oh my God. I mean, I remember we were all, because it was basically like a fascinating story, but it was also basically porn.
Really,
I mean,
was.
I remember we were just like, oh my God, we got to read these books. This is amazing. But it was like good.
And it was the first time I think a lot of women had so openly talked about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Also
definitely.
A good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always good to have discussions and especially to have discussions with your girlfriends and then be able to have it with your significant other or just so you can kind of see like, okay, well, what did somebody else think about this? Like, how did they feel?
Did you see the movie Baby Girl with Nicole Kidman? It came out at the end of 2024. So like,
no,
December.
I'm also like the worst when it comes to movies. But no, I did not see that. I've heard people talk about it, but only that because they said that they didn't think it was very good.
Oh, a lot of people didn't think it was good. They didn't believe it. They thought it was unbelievable. They thought the narrative was too erratic. And I, as someone who lived in New York, who explored the kink lifestyle in New York and now who coaches couples, I thought it was an extremely realistic movie. And one of the pieces of feedback was like, oh, yeah, as if Antonio Banderas would ever say no to Nicole Kidman, because in the movie, she's submissive. She's having an affair with an intern, but she does want her husband to be the dominant partner. And he's very shaming of her wanting him to, like, spank her, just be rough with her. He's like, no, that's like men aren't supposed to do that. And it shames Nicole Kidman into pursuing it with somebody else. And an argument was made that, like, oh, well, she didn't need to. And to me, I was like, well, she did. She had such deep shame when she asked her own husband for it. She had to hide under a sheet in the movie. And that's very realistic. People find it hard to face their own desires. And then that's one area where communication breaks down. So out of all the unrealistic movies about kink, I thought Baby Girl did a really good job of showing what that shame can actually be like and how hard it can be to have a conversation.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a perfect segue into my next question, because I wanted to, you know, after we've talked about all these different things and talked about the spectrum, and I'm curious, what advice do you have for couples as people who are listening to this show, right? And maybe there's some, I know my audience is mostly women, so maybe they're sending it to their significant others and saying, like, hey, like, listen to this and let's talk later. Like, what advice do you have for if this is a conversation that neither party has ever had? How do you kind of dip your toe into making this something you can talk about openly?
So I always recommend you lead with curiosity. You start by asking your partner and engaging them in conversation. Do you have any fantasies you've never explored? And hoping that they open up to you about something about that they'd like to explore. And if they do, I would highly recommend listening with open ears. Don't just be waiting to tell and share your thing. Find out more about what their fantasy is. Ask questions. Engage with it. And then I always think that by asking questions, it is a natural segue. Even if they don't ask you back, you can say, well, there's something I've always wanted to try, or there's something I've tried before, and it's really important to me. It's very important to say it's important to me, because your partner might just think this is a casual conversation because you've brought it up without a lot of heaviness to it, as you should. But when you share the thing you want to try, if it's important to you, you should draw attention to that and say, this is something I've always wanted to try, or if I'd tried this before and I really enjoyed it, and it's really important to me that you seriously consider it, this is something I've always fantasized about, or this is something I enjoy. I would explain what the thing is, but I would lean much more heavily on what we talked about earlier. What core desire it's fulfilling for you. What is the feeling behind the kink? If you're into bondage and being tied up, explore and ask yourself, what did I enjoy about that? Did I feel safe? Did I feel secure? Did I feel controlled? And that helps you explain. Sometimes the kink itself is hard for your partner, especially if they've never engaged in this world. It's hard to understand. But I'm a firm believer people can empathize with feelings. I want to feel controlled. It's like, okay, I understand what it means to be controlled. It might be interesting to your partner to think, like, oh, you want to be controlled? That's weird, because I would hate to be controlled. I want freedom. And then that's a perfect way to say, well, maybe that's your core desire. You want a lot of freedom and you want freedom of expression. I want the opposite. So it's a way to relate. It's a way for you to understand your desires more deeply. And then it's a conversation starter too, because with that empathy, there's a higher chance of it bringing more questions. So I lead with curiosity, listen with open ears, and then introduce your interests, leaning heavily on the feelings and highlighting the importance this has for you. Right?
That's such a great framework to follow, because I think it makes sense. And I've never thought about it from the perspective of the why behind it, which is crazy to me, because I think about root causes in every aspect of my life. I'm always like, well, like, what's the root cause of this? Like, what's really lying underneath here? But like for this, I was just more like, what if somebody told me they wanted to pee on me? What would I say? You know, but sitting there and being like, okay, well, why do you want to do that? Like, what feeling is that going to bring you? You know, and then it's such a more in-depth conversation, and it also could shine some interesting light.
Yeah, it's extremely constructive, even if you don't do it. I think it's really important too. I almost think it's even more important to prepare for you being the person who's about to have the conversation. Do not shame your partner no matter what they say. Even if you're the one who opens up the conversation, if they throw something out like, I've always wanted to have a threesome, don't shame them. Society holds up threesomes in the same way like romance novels hold up billionaires. They act like that's everything you should want. So if a man or even a woman says, well, I've always wanted a threesome, ask some more questions. They're like, oh, what's appealing about that to you? What do you imagine that would look like? ask about the specific mechanics. See how in-depth they've considered it. Because oftentimes when I have clients who come to me, and sometimes they'll come to me before they decide to like pursue a threesome, before they decide to go to a sex party, and I sit them down and I ask them the very serious questions of, how do you imagine to one partner? Like, what does that look like to you? And then I say, oh, and what does it mean when you say that? And then I talk to the other partner. I said, did you imagine the same thing? And we actually get into sort of those root things of like, two people are imagining a different thing. And by asking these very specific questions, it makes you face what you're actually going into. And I think that that can be helpful too, because someone might think that they have this fantasy of a threesome, but when they really think about how it might be a little bit awkward, and they can be awkward. There's three people doing something that you've only done with one other person your whole, like for the last 20 years. Really talking about what it's going to look like can help you understand if you really think you want it.
Yeah. I mean, especially with something like that, like there's different logistics when there's three people versus two.
I ask people to get into the logistics. I'm like, oh, do all three of you get on the bed at the same time? I ask specific questions like that. It's like, are you all starting on the couch? Are you starting with kissing? Is everyone getting naked at the same time? And I ask them to imagine this because I want them to understand that this is the level of communication they have to have going into it to be on the same page. Because if I'm coaching a couple on this, I want to make sure they're not going in blindly. So I like to prepare them with questions like that.
No, that's wonderful. I mean, it's obviously like why you're good at what you do, because you're opening up so many different avenues of thinking and different layers to what people are thinking that they desire.
Yeah. And that's what I try. And you know what? Even if it's just a fantasy, maybe the best first step is to dirty talk that fantasy. You don't engage in any of it. For example, I've had partners who weren't really into spanking me, but I'm like, okay, but will you pretend that you want to while we're having sex? Will you say like, you've been a bad girl, you need to be punished? Because that takes me to that place. That's an area where I'm not saying it scratches the itch completely, but sometimes it does. And maybe if that's all your partner's willing to do and you're okay with it, that could actually bring you closer together and help you feel more seen. You know,
definitely. And I think sometimes too, like being able to have conversations and maybe just like if it's something more on the mild side, right? Like if it's like, okay, I've never had someone pull my hair, like maybe you try that. Or like I used to think when I would hear people say like, oh, I like getting choked, I used to be like, that's insane. Like that's literally insane. And then one time it happened and I was like, that was really fucking cool. And like, so it's like, you're like, oh, wait, turns out I thought that was great. You know,
the coach and me, the lifelong kinkster, was like, did they negotiate? Did they tell you? And they were like,
Oh, yeah.
Which it's okay if they didn't tell you either. Well, it's not okay, but like it happens. And that's part of like the lack of education around this, because we run from it. We shy away from it. But I'm glad it was a good experience that you had and enjoyed it as opposed to a shock and you had to think like, oh, did I like it or didn't I? I did like it. I'm glad you had that good experience. That's the other thing. Never just drop this in the bedroom. Like, I would not recommend that the time to mention your kink fetish fantasy is when both of you are naked about to do to have sex or just about to, because you might be throwing a little grenade into someone. You don't know what your partner's triggers are if you've never talked to them about it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's super important. Because like, I feel like that is another thing that you see in movies or whatever. They'll be literally like about to do it. And then he's like, I've always really wanted to. And she's like, what? Like, get out of here.
And I've had that happen before too, of like, what, like people just being like, they know that I'm pretty open and things like that. But at no point prior to this have they mentioned this more extreme thing they want to do. And I'm just thinking like, no, like you cannot bring this up right now. I really once it starts, like we're not changing the game here. So that's just something to warn people, because I understand. I also understand it can be very appealing to get someone to that, like, oh, we're about to, I'll just throw in this extra thing and see how they take it. Like, no.
Yeah.
Have a serious conversation outside of that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
I know it happens. And that can lead to rejection. And then you're in a worse place than when
you're... Oh my God, then you're naked and rejected. That sounds awful.
It is. And it can be really harmful for the future of your relationship too. Hopefully not. But sometimes you can go, you know, sideways that way.
Oh my God, when I said naked and rejected, my next thought was, ooh, that could be a good title.
I thought so too. I was like, what's the starting point? So there I was, naked and rejected.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I don't think for anyone, please don't be naked and rejected unless that's your kink. And some people, like, that's exactly what they want, to be right. Stripped naked and then rejected in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah. I mean, like everything, it just boils down to so much communication. So you've really given so much great information and insight on this topic. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm glad. Sometimes I go off on my passionate tangents because I get so excited about it, but I've loved the conversation today.
Yeah, no, I think it's really fun. And like I said, with the topics that we discuss on this show on a regular basis, you know, shame is certainly something that comes up very often. And, you know, at my core, I'm like I'm such a love lover. You know, I'm such a person that, like, I want love. I want that people to be happy in their relationships. I want them to be in love in their relationships, and I want them to stay in their relationships if they can. And so if they can communicate in ways to keep that romance and spark alive, and, you know, this, you know, I mean, I don't know. You hear people say, like, oh, we've been together for 30 years. We got to spice things up. Like,
yeah, and they do. I know a ton of couples, like I work with a ton, who have been together 20 or 30 years. And then it's literally like they're about to retire. And they're like, we want to focus on us again. And they want to spice it up. I love hearing it. I love, like, coming up with, really pulling their fantasies out of them and discussing them, because those might be things they've suppressed. Or when they got married, 50 Shades of Grey didn't exist. They didn't even know this world existed. And now they're curious. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, amazing. Well, Amanda, thank you so much. Let everybody know how they can find you if they want to, you know, book your time or learn more about kink.
Yeah. So you can go to amandadames.com and you can book a consult with me there. But I'm also on Instagram as the_kinkconsultant, where you can check out. I do a ton of educational content there. And then I also have my own podcast strictly focused on kink, the Kink Consultant Podcast, where I go into a lot more fetishes and kinks, and I have a lot of kinky couples come on and discuss their own interests and their journey. And they give it
cool.
Too. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I need to start listening to your podcast, because that sounds like just something to be like, whoa, this is interesting.
And I title the episode so that you get an idea of what the kink, or like what the relationship dynamic is. So, like, you could just go through the list and see, like, yeah, I'm into this. Let me.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you again so much for being here. This was tons of fun. And I will link your info in the show notes for everyone. And that's great.
Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
Awesome. As always, thank you for being here for another episode of The Scarlet Edit. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. I thought it was such a fun conversation. So, as I kind of snuck in a little bit last week, I am launching a new series. So there will be a new episode of The Scarlet Edit coming out on Monday. So keep your eye on your podcast app. I'm really excited for this new series. There will still be episodes coming out on Thursdays, like always, but this series is just something different, a little twist, and I'm excited to add it to the Scarlet Edit lineup. If you are listening on the Apple Podcast app, please go in and rate this episode 5 stars and let me know what you think, and we will see you next week.